Hello and welcome to the TOVG podcast. My name is George Weedman, Jimmy's name is Jimmy, and we actually have a great friend of ours on here today. It's Chris Franklin of Errant Signal is in here with us.
Hello.
Hey there.
Hi.
Hi.
Hello.
So yeah, I don't know if people know, but Chris does a show on YouTube that has heavily influenced mine that everyone loves called Errant Signal. And we met up at GDC, and we're good friends, right? Right?
Yeah, it was fun. We had like party time.
We had taco burritos, and then
is
wait,
that real?
No, I mean, let's say
food.
Sushi burritos. Yeah.
Oh, I was gonna say, well, taco burritos sounds like the fakest food you've ever made up.
It sounds quite doable, really, though.
Sounds redundant.
Okay, and now in San Francisco, there's this restaurant that serves burrito-sized sushi rolls.
Yeah.
It's really interesting. They, like, roll it up, and it's the size of a burrito, just full of rice and raw fish, and I don't know. It was
good.
Okay. It tasted good, but it kind of fell apart, you know?
Yeah, I'm not sure how I feel about that because, like, kind of the pull of sushi for me is taking that, like, one perfect size bite and just kind of savoring
it.
But that sounds like indulgent food where you're taking, like, a mouthful bite and being like, I don't know.
Part of the problem is that it is basically a downtown San Francisco lunch spot, so it's very much to go, and we didn't have anywhere to go, so we ate it in a park without any, like, place to put down the canisters or anything. So we're just, like, taking a bite, and it's just falling all over our laps, and we're just going, oh, more good sushi. And it was good, but it was really messy.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
But that's, like, the appeal of sushi, right? It's, like, a very elegant, artistic presentation of food.
Right.
And
right.
This was, like, the literal definition of Americanization.
Yeah, pretty much.
All right.
I mean,
anyway.
The only time I've seen that work is, like, have you ever had, like, a seared ahi tuna burger?
Those can be good.
I have not, but I can picture it.
It's like in that vein where it's, like, Americanized, but there's, like, wasabi mayonnaise, and it's just, like, a thick slab of tuna, and they, like, it's really minimal for a burger, and it's like, as close as you can get without making it, like, too far. So, I don't know.
No.
Anyway,
yeah.
Video games.
Here on the TOVG podcast, we like to inform and entertain our listeners about food.
Yeah.
Every week.
Sushi.
So yeah, but that was food we ate months ago in March. How has your weeks been this week?
Mine's been pretty all right. I've been playing a little bit more Pokemon after I'm sure you guys didn't watch, or I guess I don't know if you did or not, but the Pokemon World Championships were this past weekend.
Yeah, I saw that happen. I didn't watch them, but I like read up on the headlines and stuff.
Yeah, I'm sure anybody who, like, was on a news article site that day, like Sunday evening or Monday morning, saw the like you won't believe what Pokemon won worlds, like the BuzzFeed art, you know, headline.
What we can learn from Pokemon.
Oh, God. But yeah, it was like the winner of the VG, or like the video game Masters division, was from South Korea, and he brought a Pachirisu onto his team, which is like a little squirrel Pokemon. And it's like, if you saw it in like a competitive scene, you'd be like, oh, this kid, what is this jokester doing? And then it, like, carried the team and, like, did this incredible underdog, like, movie worthy victory. And so yeah, it was just like a really inspiring thing, and like all of me and my Pokemon friends, like, oh man, I want to train up a team for that style of play and stuff. And it was really cool. So that's what I've been doing.
I'm surprised that Pokemon has competitive events, actually. Like, that was,
yeah,
that was the one that caught me the most off guard. Because if I remember right, like, Pokemon was really, really grindy and stat-driven.
Is this Pokemon the card game or Pokemon the electronic game?
They had both. At the World Championships, they have six categories. They have the training card game, junior, senior, and masters, and then the video game, junior, senior, and masters. So, yeah.
So does everyone play their Pokemon at, like, max level all the time? And
They have their preset rules. It's like, any Pokemon over level 50 will be reduced to level 50. And it's essentially you bring, everybody just brings level 50s is like what you do. And of course, like all the competitive guys have them IV trained and, you know,
is right there, moves is and there everything. A time limit for each player's turn?
I don't think so. I think there's a match time limit. I'm not sure if there's a turn time limit.
Huh.
I don't know.
That sounds like you could exploit or strategize it by maxing out your turn if that would be something that you could spend to your advantage.
I don't know. It doesn't seem like that kind of competitive thing where like many people who would want to do some sort of exploit like that would be in there. But I don't know. It was really, I at least caught that very final match, which was really hype. And all the VODs of all the finals are up. And I think I really need to get around to watching a couple of the other ones because it was pretty cool, especially for a Pokemon fan. It was like super cool. But yeah,
I just like to hear the inner monologues of the players, like remembering how back when Pokemon was really silly and new in like 1999. just like I want to see them confront their parents and be like, "I told you, Mom."
Yeah, seriously.
Chris, how was your week?
Mostly uneventful. I've just been slogging through Watch Dogs, so that's been my my week.
I'm sorry.
Oh, jeez. Well, I mean, it's not like, I guess it was worse when it came out because of the hype, but it was just like, for me, it was kind of mediocre-ish. It just got annoying with a few major issues as opposed to like everything being wrong.
Mm-hmm.
What are you thinking of it so far?
I don't like it. I'm writing up a thing on it now, so that'll be up, I hope, this weekend. But I don't know. I'm not a big fan of Watch Dogs. I'll put it that way.
I remember the whole while I was just kind of having this inner vision of how awesome it would be if the game played like a Deus Ex Human Revolution in sandbox mode. Or just like how many more interesting things they could do with this concept by slowing down the action or ramping up the interactivity with the world that didn't necessarily involve shooting things. Because it's that we were talking about this a few weeks ago about the dominant strategy of like in Bioshock Infinite, like just shoot people in the face. You don't really need to worry about the vigors, right? That's what they're called. Because I was about to say plasmids. And Watch Dogs deals with that same issue where it gives you a bunch of cool alternate abilities, but the upgrading system and the just point-and-click cover shooting doesn't really let them
Yeah, it just
through.
Gives you, like, a definitive right way to do things.
Mm-hmm. While also presenting options that you could but don't really have to care about.
Really, it feels to me like the game could have been more cyberpunky too. Like it's this weird thing where it's like almost cyberpunk, but not really.
It's yeah. Oh gosh. I noticed that too from like the very beginning of that first trailer where he walks into this weird, abstract, smoky bar that looks nothing like normal people, but then walks outside and it's like the normal ass city of Chicago. But it's also plastered with this high tech cyberpunk surveillance state stuff everywhere, but when you look at it, it looks okay.
Well, it's just weird because, like, on one hand, you have a bunch of really normal Chicago stuff, like, oh, it's Chicago and there's normal people who live here. And then it has stuff like the Fixers, which are like combination, you know, freelance hackers and assassins. And I'm like,
I still don't understand how seriously we're supposed to take the Fixers.
Well, I mean, they're like the primary goons you shoot the whole game because they're the ones that just sort of swarm. Like, anytime the game decides it needs an action segment, it basically just swarms you with those guys. Like, oh, somebody called some Fixers. They're going to come in and try to shoot you now. And that's,
So those are like really super militant nerds.
Yes, they are like, yeah.
They are hackers who are like ready to throw their lives away. For a paycheck. And supposedly, like, you are one too. Like, that's the context of the multiplayer mode, is you signing on to Fixer contracts to go shoot some other player. So which side is Aiden on?
You know what? You know the moment that the game utterly lost me? Okay, it wasn't the moment the game lost me. I'd already hated the game at that point. But the moment where I wanted to throw my controller down in disgust was the very, very end of the game where it's unveiled that basically this is a superhero origin story. And I just wanted to throw my controller across the room at that point.
Is it when he discovers the Batcave?
Did you beat the game? Did you go through the story all the way?
Yeah, I got all the way through
it. It's when it's like he's giving his grand speech at the end of like, I'll always be there to watch them and if necessary, punish them. And then it does Watchdogs logo like it's the freaking bat signal over the city. And I'm like, oh my God, they think this is a superhero game.
Yeah. Well, I was getting that motif, a lot of it, but like it was strongest for me when he finds the bat cave. Like it literally is a bat cave. It looks like the bat cave. It smells probably like the bat cave.
You know, and, now that you point that out, that is exactly what it is. Because they're like, oh, it's just a hacker bunker. It's a really cool place with a bunch of tech. But no, you're right. It's basically the Super Friends Cave. It's a place where all of his friends meet, and it's a safe house, and there's all this cool tech there, and they can monitor the city. It is basically the Batcave. That's a really good way to put it.
He sees crimes happening on this wall of monitors, and then he gets into a vehicle and races to the scene. And also, like, he talks in a grumbly voice to people who don't care as much about fighting crime as he does. It was... I think Aiden is a fairly strong analogy of a weak Batman analog.
My favorite thing about the Batcave is when you say, like, oh, you see a crime and you get in your vehicle and go stop it. The only vehicle they give you on that island is that stupid SUV. Yeah. It's like, I'm going to get out of this cave and go into my giant Humvee and run over bad guys.
That's how you fight crime. You find someone committing a crime and then run them over.
Well, but that's what the game encourages you to do, right? Like, there's all the crimes that get committed. You can shoot anyone who basically is guilty of anything as low as, you know, purse snatching. And your answer is... Go ahead.
It gives you reward points for it, but it does try to incentivize non-lethal takedowns by giving you more points for it, but it doesn't necessarily punish you for it. And the thing that weirded me out was that it doesn't punish you for stealing cars. So you can witness a purse snatching and then, like, toss someone out of their car and race after the snatcher.
And run him over.
Well, you'll lose points if you run him over, but stealing his car is okay by Watchdog standards.
Oh, great. So weird. I'm glad I didn't play that game.
I feel so conflicted about it because sneaking around is fun. It's just got a bunch everything else in the game tacked on to sneaking around. I didn't enjoy as much.
I just wish that the hacking was a bigger part of it. Like, I mean, we already covered this, but it does feel like it's just sort of this superfluous side thing to the main combat. And it just, I really wish you could actually solve problems through hacking instead of just like, okay, I can explode a dude's grenades and then back to gun shooting. And that's completely uninteresting.
Yeah. I think one of the great contradictions of the older, like, FPS RPG-style games is that in order to incentivize your secondary abilities, those games, like, very fortunately have bad gunplay. Like, when you're playing Deus Ex or System Shock, well, Deus Ex is Unreal, but, like, System Shock 2 is on the Dark Engine from Thief, and it was not built to have hit-scan projectile weapons. They are designed to be really slow because they would cause players to have a FPS spike. They would cause lag because the engine had to render every projectile as its own, like, object in the world, and it was a big performance hit. So in order to have the player not rely on shooting as a crutch, like, they just kind of took advantage of their limitations and made the shooting awful unless you spent a lot of time investing into skill trees and points that made it less, not necessarily less awful, but more practical.
They basically just upped the damage that you could do.
And the accuracy cone and, like, a very, very linear sliding style things. But even then, like, shooting wouldn't feel good enough to actually play it like as if it was a first-person shooter.
Right.
It made it viable in the sense that your guns didn't immediately fall apart after two firings like they would in the beginning of the game.
Yeah. System Shock 2 was infamous for its breakage.
It's like, I don't think gun manufacturers in the System Shock world would be open if you could only fire one clip and then the gun is just a giant hunk of metal in untrained hands.
Gosh.
But you fix that by downloading a patch to your brain that that makes the guns decay less. It's kind of a leap of logic, but I guess
a little bit.
Video games have those. They have leaps of logic. So, sorry, what was that?
I actually just wanted to say, I think you were telling me a little bit before the cast that, George, mm-hmm. that Chris, you played PT, correct?
I played through about half of it myself and then watched someone play through the entire thing, except for actually getting the ending, because that is uh-huh. just the most impossible puzzle in the world.
Did you, what did you think about it?
Mixed feelings, I guess. I really, really love the atmosphere. I mean, first of all, it's absolutely gorgeous. I don't know if you guys right. have seen some of those pictures, but it's...
Yeah, it looks amazing.
And it was nice and spooky. I mean, I'm kind of a wimp with that stuff, but I really, really, really enjoyed it. It had really great atmosphere. It was nice and spooky. It didn't fall into the trap of more recent Silent Hill games where it's just sort of like, and then zombies, shoot them, and, you know, that didn't happen. But... some of the quirkier aspects of I don't know whether to blame Hideo Kojima or not, or if it was just sort of the result of being designed as this viral puzzle for people to solve. But
right.
getting to the end, like once you're there and you've sort of quote unquote finished the demo and you just have to unlock the Silent Hills trailer, all of the fear goes away because it's literally like walk 10 steps. And then wait for a baby to laugh. And then when the baby's laugh is done, you're going to hear a noise, and it's a scary, spooky noise. And that's going to tell you one of three places in the hallway you need to go, and then you need to zoom in and stare at this thing, and then maybe you need to talk in a microphone, and maybe you don't, but then the ghost is going to show up if you chose the right one, and then maybe based on a random number generator, you will get the ending. And
right.
I couldn't get it to trigger, unfortunately.
Yeah, I actually... a couple of guys in the office played it for Super Beard Bros for their show, and... Yeah, I, from what I know, they like played a little bit to try and get the ending to go after they finished playing on their episode, and they weren't able to get it either. And there was like they were like looking up tutorials on how to do it, and I guess like somebody claimed that like there was if you get this video of Hideo Kojima saying "Did you write it?" looping for like a minute, and you play it into your microphone, it like triggers the end or something.
I think you just have to have some kind of noise going into the microphone while you look at the phone.
Right. It's like something like that or something. I don't know. Which, in that case, like, as hard as that is to figure out, that's a really cool thing. Like, I think it's supposed to be, like, they want you to, like, scream when you're playing their game, and, like, that triggers things to happen from the microphone. I think that's, like, a cool concept.
I just had a crazy thought. What other games have non-optional require microphone input from the player besides PT, which is like this cheap or free demo downloadable thing, and The Legend of Zelda on the original Famicom, where you had to scream into the microphone to blast out the bunny ears?
I completely forgot about that.
Yeah, I just now remembered it because they're taking it back. I don't know. I think the Xbox version of Manhunt had you use the microphone for some weird gimmick thing that got enemies to turn around if you wanted them to.
Go ahead.
Are we allowed to include things like "Hey, you Pikachu" and
"That's
C-Man"?
What I was just gonna say.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe it's not such a. Well, no, that's still uncommon. Like, what is that? Like a 6-year gap in between microphone talking games?
Well, I mean, there's "Hey, you Pikachu." I remember, was it End War? Or something.
Oh yeah,
game on 360 where they tried to do like full voice commands, and it was like an army
really
RTS.
Work. Yeah,
it was okay. It wasn't great. It was very like basic though. It had to be so basic for you to be able to do that stuff. It was like squad one, go here. It was like nothing like as in depth as you could just be doing with like a mouse and a keyboard.
Yeah, at which point is it even faster than doing it with buttons?
I know that the DS and the 3DS had a lot of like. Little microphone things that you can do. There was a couple games, like I think WarioWare, like there was a lot of like little bits in WarioWare where you have to like blow into the microphone or like scream into the microphone or something. Mm-hmm. So there's like things like that, but I don't know. I can't think of any specifics.
Anyways, unless there's anything else you guys want to say about PT, I have another fun-looking Japanese upcoming horror game that that we could be ready to talk about.
I'm ready.
Okay. Well, this week a lot of Gamescom stuff kept happening. They released a lot of long trailers. I don't even know if they're trailers so much at this point when you're past the 6 minute mark. But it seems like a lot of companies have looked and listened to the positive reception of Nintendo's E3 showing and are just like distributing raw, really really long gameplay demos rather than. Then not, which could be
right,
the alternative.
Rather than like teaser trailers and like pre-rendered stuff.
Yeah, longest of them all I saw was The Evil Within. And this stuff I actually try to avoid. I did not watch this 77-minute of The Evil Within that came out on Gamescom. Yeah, I know.
Jeez.
But I've seen some of it before, and I guess it kind of... I feel so conflicted about this stuff because I don't want to watch it because it'll spoil it.
Uh-huh.
But at the same time, I guess I kind of have to if I'm going to be able to effectively talk about it and stuff.
Yeah,
but yeah. 77 minutes of The Evil Within are now out. It looks. I've seen some parts of the game that look like a legitimate survival horror game with like shitty controls and overpowering enemies, and I've seen other parts of the game that made it look like a shooting gallery.
Right.
And I guess if they're trying to harken back to Resident Evil 4, then juggling between those two different types of set pieces and laying them out in a exciting way of pacing is going to be the primary challenge. But you can't like look at stuff like this and not think about, I don't know, Silent Hill Homecoming and how how easy it is to turn horror games into... not horrifying
games.
Shooting galleries. Oh, bore games.
Chore games.
God.
Snore games. Okay.
That happened to Dead Space so fast, too, man. Like, in three games. Like, I know a lot of horror fans don't like Dead Space 1 that much, but it at least had
Dead Space 1.
Silent Hill, or not Silent Hill, it at least had System Shocky horror roots. And then by the third one, it was like, you want to play Call of Duty in space with a little bit of horror? Yeah. And it's like,
with a friend?
Yeah, with a friend.
The whole way through?
Yeah, I don't know. I like you said a lot of horror game people don't like Dead Space. I'm not really a horror game guy. I love Amnesia. Like Amnesia is like my favorite horror game, like without a doubt.
And Amnesia is totally a legit one.
Right, and I like Dead Space, the first one at least. I don't know. I had a blast because I think it might be because of how I played it. Because I just like sat down and like turned it on and played for 12 hours and just beat it. And just like at home alone, all the lights off, and just like one playthrough, I did it with just the plasma cutter, and so it was like this cool challenge. And I don't know, I liked it a lot. I thought it used like a lot of cool elements that weren't. It's like not just jump scares. It used a lot of cool things like the like regenerating necromorph that can't die, like. And you have to, like, cut his legs off to slow him down, but you're wasting ammo, and you have to, like, do puzzles while he's crawling up to you, and you have to, like, use more ammo to slow him down, but then you, like, screw yourself over later if you don't have the ammo. It's, like, that was, like, real fear, and I thought that was really good, but then, like, and as opposed to something like Fear 2, which I did the same thing. I played in one sitting, in, like, 12 hours, just sat there and played it. It was, like, okay, walk into a room, spooky, creepy ghost stuff happens, walk outside, shoot some guys in gas masks.
I still get really sad when I think about the Fear franchise.
Weird franchise, too.
Yeah.
I never really played it for the horror so much as the gunplay, though. And the first game has some of the best gunplay in across the whole genre. But the second one, like, it was a visual downgrade almost. Way less shit flies around the room when you're shooting in Fear 2 than in Fear 1. And, like, granted, the baseline quality of assets improved, but there was so much that they lost for effects for some reason between those sequels that it kind of ends up impacting the gameplay to a weird point. It doesn't feel as good as the first.
Yeah, there was only really, like, one or two moments from Fear 2 that I look back on and I'm like, oh, that was really well crafted. There was like one where you go into like, it's like a kitchen type of area and there's only one light and it's flickering like really, it's like strobing almost. And like half of the times when it strobes on, Alma is like walking, but like half the times when it strobes on, she's not there. But then like when it's dark, you can see like these ghosts that you have to be like fighting. And so it was this weird like super contrast, like lights on, almost there, lights off, ghosts, lights on, almost not there, lights off, ghosts. And it's like, but it's happening like really fucking fast. And I don't know, that was like the one part that stood out to me. Everything else was like whatever, and the ending was awful.
I remember it getting really, really weird in the ending.
It ended and I was like, did it, like what? And then like my friend was like, did that just happen? And I was like, I think that happened. I think, I don't even know. And I had to like look it up later to make sure that I wasn't like not, like that I wasn't like, that I was like sure of what I just like experienced.
So, okay, I guess like spoiler alert for anyone who hasn't played the Fear franchise, but the Fear franchise gets dumb at the end of the second game. So the third game, the continuity, like is Alma supposed to be a child or a grown up in that one? Or are they like, are there different ghosts of her manifesting as either one depending on the mood? And like, what happens to the baby? It's like an episode of Ghost Mallory.
Oh man, what a thing to be compared to.
Okay, anyways,
you know what horror game no one, what horror action game no one talks about anymore because it was terrible, is Clive
What's that?
Barker's Jericho.
Oh my god, what? Yeah.
Was that a horror game?
In the loosest sense of the word, I guess. In the same way that Undying started as a horror game and became a shooter.
People forgot about Jericho super fast. I don't know if... have you guys tried to like go back and play Undying? It didn't age super well.
No, it didn't. I remember it being like the scariest game I ever played, but I was like 12 when the game came out. And I go back and play it now and I'm like... this is the worst thing ever. It really is really terrible.
I find it hard to remember what people saw in it, because I didn't play through it until past its prime. Like, it's usually pretty easy to give a game a nostalgia test by just playing it. Like, if it still holds up well, then you can play it for the first time at any time and have fun. But I tried to play through Clive Barker's Undying around 2009-ish. Uh-huh. And it didn't work. It didn't do it for me. Yeah, I played the demo of Jericho, and that was all I wanted of that.
Yeah, I'm looking over the Jericho wiki right now, and none of this sounds like a thing that I'm interested in at all.
Okay, go ahead.
No, you.
I was just gonna say it's kind of enjoyable if you really like bad games. Like, if you really want a B game to play, like game. Like, because it's not one of, like, I know a lot of other people cover like bad games, like you can go on Greenlight and find something that's like half baked, half finished and make fun of it. Jericho is a complete game. It's done. It's just terrible. And that's what I find so amusing about it, is that it's like, it's got multiple characters, it's got voice acting, it's got cutscenes, and the result is just the most ugly, creepy looking, not fun to play sniper with a psychic ability to change bullet trajectories, all that stuff.
Oh,
just
no.
Speaking of snipers with psychic abilities to change bullet directories, that's kind of sort of what's going on in Quantum Break. I don't know how interested you guys are in Quantum Break, but the first two Max Payne games are some of my favorite games of all time. I think the writing in them is brilliant. I didn't necessarily enjoy Alan Wake so much, but I'm still interested in seeing what those same guys do, and it looks like...
Oh, you know what? I liked Alan Wake.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, I'm not saying I hated it. I just...
No, you just, like, made me remember the fact that I played a game called Alan Wake one time, and I liked it.
It's just coming into it from the expectations of Max Payne, which I thought were brilliant. It just, I guess, because of me and my preferences ruining the fun, I ended up wanting something out of it that it necessarily wasn't.
Right.
Well, anyways, Quantum Break is a third-person shooter, which shouldn't necessarily surprise me, because that's what all their other games were. But it did surprise me, because it wasn't really advertised as one until now, now the gameplay's out. It's a third-person cover shooter with magic powers assigned to an offhand alt button. That mm-hmm. sure sounds less special than what they were marketing it as originally. Because remember that E3 presentation from last year, or was it the Xbox One reveal? Some big gaudy event. They announced it alongside a TV show that they were going to be tying in, and they didn't show gameplay so much as just like a CGI of the characters panning around investigating trans-dimensional crime scenes in the future of the days that have passed. It looked weird.
Yeah.
It looked unusual.
Yeah, it does. I'm looking at some screenshots and stuff.
It didn't look like a third-person cover shooter with magic buttons. We'll see. I guess I don't know what I expected, but it's not quite what I expected.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, like I said, I liked Alan Wake, but I played it briefly. I never got to finish it. I liked the idea of the game. Like, I liked how it controlled and everything. As far as a game that seems to be an action shooter, though, and not more of, like, a horror, I don't know if I would like the same general idea and control. I guess we'll see, though. We probably won't see, because I likely won't play this, because I'm likely never going to get an Xbox One. But, you know.
Well, it might be not likely to remain exclusive forever. Oh. Like, that's what they were saying about Alan Wake. Like, they originally marketed it as cross-platform, and then all of a sudden changed course to make it exclusive to Xbox 360. But then they decided, no, let's release it on PC a year and a half later, and the world still turned. So, Chris, I remember a old spoiler warning show about Alan Wake. Did you guys make it all the way through the game?
Amazingly, yes, but it would not surprise you to know that by the end of it, we were talking about things like what we had for dinner that day or what we saw on TV lately.
Sushi burritos.
Exactly. It was like, it's an interesting enough game that's probably about, I don't know, 3 hours-ish too long, and at that point the combat has well overstayed its welcome, because every single encounter is shine the flashlight same. On guy and then kill him with bullets. Shine flashlight
it,
on
it
guy.
It amazed me. Every single enemy encounter has a little cutscene showing the enemies running into the stage.
Oh, that's right. Like, that was annoying.
Every single one of them, if I do remember it correctly. It's been a while. But
though, I mean, let's be real here, that part where you're on, like, the like rock band stage, and you have like the spotlights, and there's like a cheesy rock song playing while you're spotlighting crowds of zombies or like darkness people, was pretty funny.
That's what I started to not take it seriously. Like, after coming from Max Payne, I was wanting to take it seriously, but the game kept trying to be more cheesy and dumb than I wanted it to, and that's.
I mean, like, the first tip-off to not taking the game seriously should have been when the game is about, like, dreams, and your character's name is Alan Wake, A. Wake.
Well,
it's like,
Max Payne has a cheesy name, and it's cheesy and stupid and silly, but it's
but
also...
Max Payne was created, like, forever ago. It was also, created in the time of cheese.
And I guess I was a young, impressionable child when I discovered some of the best writing in the dumbest genre possible. But anyways, whatever. Quantum Break. I'm guessing it'll be more like Alan Wake than Max Payne. So
yeah. I don't know. I, as far as Alan Wake goes, I like American Nightmare, because that's like 2.5 hours. It's 2.5 hours, and it toys with the sort of mythos and actually has an interesting villain, unlike all of Alan Wake. It still has the crappy combat, but it also actually has the open world, more or less, that Alan Wake didn't have, so...
So, in Crytek Desperation news, they have announced that Rise, Son of Rome is coming out for PC.
Oh, great.
Yay.
Yeah. We're all looking forward to that one, right? Like,
no.
This is a game that almost tanked the company, like, among a few other failed projects, but I'm wondering, it was like touted as an Xbox One exclusive next gen experience. It looked great for a few levels, but who's the market here? Like, it's been out for a while. Who doesn't know that Rise is a bad game by now?
I guess just when all you have is a Roman legionary, every problem looks like a barbarian horde, I guess, is the only way I can interpret this.
It's a matter of perspective. So wait, then, is that an analogy for Crytek when they perceive themselves as Roman warriors who are capable of super high tech inventions beyond the I don't know what I'm trying to go here, but let's say that they have some barbarian hordes they need to stymie off, and releasing anything for everything is their solution. This looks like that happening.
Yeah. I don't know of anybody off the top of my head that cares that Rise is coming to PC.
I guess the problem is it doesn't, as a technical endeavor, it's good, but it's not amazing. It's not like, no one's going to buy this just to show off their new computer. It's not that good looking, but right. It also plays terribly. It doesn't play like a God of War. It plays like right. a QuickTime event. Like, the but combat is closer to Assassin's Creed than to God of War, and it's just sort of like, at that point, who cares?
That's the thing about tech demo games. They never play as good as they look, unless it's the first half of Crysis. The first half of Crysis 1 is pretty darn great, but like Doom 3 was, it didn't feel good in your hands. Like, what else was there? Old Tom Clancy's Splinter Cell, that was a tech demo game of the previous gen, and it played okay, but they don't really move fast ever. That's the thing I notice about tech demo games. Because they can't, because they're going to be dropping frames every now and then.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of some Nintendo tech demos off the top of my head, but I can't think
of any. Yoshi's Island is a surefire one. Star Fox.
Oh, really?
Yoshi's
was that
Story.
A tech demo?
Yoshi's Story. Yeah. No, Yoshi's Story still looks really, really great.
It's kind of got a low-res poly or low-res texture thing going on, but it does look good.
Wait,
am I thinking
great.
Of Yoshi's? There's Yoshi's Island, and then there's Yoshi's Story.
Yoshi's Island is on the SNES. Yoshi's Story is on the N64.
And the N64 Yoshi's Story, it looks okay, but I remember it looking kind of blurry.
I might have been saying the wrong Yoshi this whole time, then. Because what I'm thinking is Yoshi's Island.
Yoshi's Island is the one on the Super Nintendo.
Right. And they don't really do that whole tech demo thing anymore because being high tech is no longer one of Nintendo's priorities.
Yeah.
Anyways, Wasteland 2 has had a release date announced for September 19th. I'm looking forward to that. I think Chris Avellone is going to be at Dragon Con, and I might be able to push him aside to talk about Wasteland for a while, but he wrote a few chapters of that game, and he was a stretch goal, actually.
Really?
Yeah, if you raised up, like, I'm thinking it was $30,000 for Wasteland 2, they would have Chris Avellone come on the bills for a few chapters. So it's really inspiring. Well, I guess inspiring. It's more like a relief to see these big Kickstarter, super anticipated games finally start to have release dates and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like Wasteland 2 and Pillars of Eternity. I guess Tides of Numenera is going to come out next. A bunch of Star Citizen stuff was released during GDC. Did you guys see any of those trailers?
I did not.
No. Star Citizen is impossible to keep up with because every time I glance back at it, they've gained $30 million and a completely different set of goals, and I gave up a while ago.
In the time it takes to listen to this podcast, Star Citizen will raise $1.2 million. But they released a few trailers during Gamescom that I guess I kind of had weird mixed feelings about. I watched three of them. One of them was supposedly about the game's first-person combat mechanics, and it was a nothing trailer. It was like a minute long of a cinematic camera flying through a combat scene without anything actually happening from the first-person's perspective of anyone.
Great.
So, but yeah, they have a FPS engine tacked onto the game for shipboarding activities, which could be really cool, but this trailer was a nothing trailer that showed none of that. Another one was supposed to showcase the game's racing challenges. Apparently you can race people, and it just showed a flyover of the course, and it was objects floating in space. It didn't really look like a inspiring environment to behold, but that's what it was showcasing.
I really wonder what the impact of this is going to be, or by this, I mean the ongoing crowdfunding, because, I mean, 15, 20 years ago, if you look back at postmortems of games, feature creep was a big, big concern, mm-hmm. and games either never got released or got released that in halfway broken states because planned features didn't make it or things got cut. I wonder
or
what
things
this is
just
gonna...
didn't balance.
Exactly. And I wonder what this is going to do, because, like, I recently picked up Elite Dangerous, the early access of that, which is another...
And I'm looking forward to that one. I just don't want to play it while it's early access.
But the thing is, it is play... Like, I've actually played that game. I've sat down and I've flown across space and I've shot down guys, and it's got good parts and it's got bad parts, but Star Citizen keeps promising this mountain of stuff and nobody can play any of it. No one has seen any of it. It doesn't exist yet. It's $40 or $50 million at this point of promises, and they're willing to take even more money, but they haven't delivered anything yet, and it's just... it's
that,
weird.
That was, like... That is emblematic of the experience of me watching this FPS trailer. I was like, oh, cool, one of the game's more unique features that still features a very conventional gameplay style can finally show how that works. And no, they really didn't. It was I'm going to start calling these things nothing trailers. I don't know. Maybe I need a smoother name, but there's so many trailers out there that just exist for the sake of existing. Like, that trailer was a reassurance that this feature is on their minds, but not that it has been implemented or developed upon in a significant capacity. All right. What's next? What's next? Resident Evil Revelations 2 has been announced. That's funny.
The first one was okay.
Exactly. Exactly. Why was this announced, but not Resident Evil 7?
I mean, like, after RE5 and more specifically RE6, I think Revelations 2 is a smarter marketing move than 7.
There is something rotten in the state of Raccoon City, and for some reason they don't want to keep going to that mythos. They want to push for the spin-off series.
But the spin-off series feels more true to the roots than anything from the main series at this point, which is the weird thing. Yeah. Like,
and that's what makes this announcement hilarious.
Like, Revelations 1, I can't say I enjoyed it that much because it didn't really do anything for the formula, but it at least stuck to the formula where, like, Resident Evil... I mean, we've gone over this already in the show, but, you know, a lot of horror games tend to become shooters at certain points.
Yeah.
And you know, the camera didn't, like, get caught up all over the character's shoulder and butthole every 4 frames, and it was controllable. All right.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not a huge Resident Evil player. I tried out 5 briefly, which is not the one I should be trying out. I know that
it's,
4
it's
is the
only
one I should just go and play
if you have a friend. Otherwise, 5 is boring as hell.
Yeah. I had a friend and it was boring as hell.
Oh, well. See, this is what people are complaining about, and why they have to make Resident Evil Revelations 2. God, that's such a cumbersome name. Like, that is a sequel to, like, a derivative generic sequel name.
Yeah.
Revelations 2.
Revelations 2.
They should make
that
Revelations
like
Origins next.
Reference.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Resident Evil Revelations 2:16.
Revelations Reawakening.
Oh, God.
Revelations Chronicles.
Resident Evil The Revelationing.
Oh, Jesus Christ. We've reached max capacity here. We have to stop for a commercial break, or else we're going to reach a subtitle overflow.
Thanks again, and don't forget to feed the cat and water the plants, and trash goes out on Tuesday. Okay, goodbye, Kirby. You're the best.
Kirby, not so good at house-sitting, but really good at inhaling Waddle Dees. Happy 20th anniversary, Kirby.
Hey, guys, Alex here from That One Video Gamer and the Dex. Just letting you guys know about a few things. Firstly, the site is being revamped right now, so that's why it's down. We got hacked a few weeks ago, and we're cleaning it up and making it better and making it look better and making it easier to find things, so that's going to be done in about 2 weeks. Secondly, That One Video Gamer runs a Patreon. You can find that at patreon.com/thatonevideogamer. As of this weekend, we're updating it with new rewards and a lot more cool stuff for you guys to get in return for supporting us a little bit, so head over to patreon.com/thatonevideogamer to check it out, and stay tight, you guys.
Speaking of Resident Evil, an HD version of the Resident Evil remake has been announced for Steam and consoles. I think it's going to be running in 720p for last gen and 1080p for next or current gen, depending on what you want to call it, and PC. Uh-huh. And this has me super hyped. I guess I really shouldn't be, but this is the GameCube Resident Evil. This is the best one, almost.
I mean, I'm sure people would say 4 is the best one.
Well, yeah, but
like,
I mean,
the debate, right?
This is the best of the classic ones, and it feels weird even saying that, because it was a remake back then of them trying to change the tone of the game to something a bit more blue, gray, and serious, as opposed to red, brown, and campy like in the first one. But
well, the original, like, if you actually compare them, someone should do a video on this. One of the two of us should do a video on the divergence of Resident Evil from its roots, because that first time it goes off the rails with, like, Nemesis and crazy giant biological experiments that are all goofy, and then the next time it goes off the rails, it's like this grimdark action shooter, and it's just really weird how those, like, two different divergences, like Code Veronica and all that stuff on the Dreamcast, and then we had to, like, scale that back with this, the original GameCube remake, because we want to say, okay, no, we're going back to our roots, we're going back to horror, differs from the way they're doing it now, I guess, from we're like, okay, no more action shootery, now we're going back to Resident Evil 1 and Revelations.
Yeah.
It's roots, though. Like, even then, the original 1996, I believe it was, Resident Evil number 1 is a radically different tone than even the remake of that same game. Like, you can just look at the box art. Like, it looks like box art for Doom. It's, like an Evil Dead motif. It's super duper campy, way more campy than even by Resident Evil standards, which is like a 9 out of 10 on the camp scale. And
so I can't remember about the GameCube version of Resident Evil. Did it include the original FMV cutscenes of live action actors doing horrible things?
No. It was a CGI opening cutscene of a lot of the same events. But, like, that's what I'm saying. Like, they aren't going to seriously go back to their roots and actually make another live action FMV one, because that would just be getting too close to its roots. Resident Evil Remake was kind of a reboot of the series to redesign the characters and the art motif into something that they ended up carrying over to Resident Evil 4, which rebooted the gameplay into a radically different thing that has kind of degenerated up to this point. But this is a HD re-release of Remake, which means it is the remake.
Great.
Yeah, I know. I'm really looking forward to talking about this thing in the future, because I get to say remake a lot when referring to the 2015 version as opposed to the 2002 version.
But it's also called Resident Evil, so it's the remake.
Yeah, oh, it's the Resident Evil remake re-release.
Oh, God.
It's going to be great. I'm actually
interested, because mm-hmm. this gives me, like, a current platform to play something that, like, is something that I should play, you know, according to a lot of people.
Oh, you should. It's really good.
I guess I will wait for the probably George's impressions of this when it comes out, so that I can see if it's, like, true to the unremade original, so that I know if I'm getting the real experience.
It doesn't have to be true. It just has to be good. And the GameCube version, the GameCube remake of Resident Evil is like the de facto pinnacle, for me at least, example of classic survival horror tank controls gameplay. And It's also the swan song of pre-rendered backgrounds. My God, that game looks gorgeous. And I'm really wondering if they keep the original, like, vector or high resolution, whatever files they have at Capcom for those backgrounds. Because if they do, it's going to look incredible in 1080p. And it also might be like 80 gigabytes, but we'll see. But yeah, you don't get pre-rendered backgrounds that look that good anymore, and they work really well in the game, and you don't get like fixed camera angle tank controls anymore, and it's one of the few games where it works really well. There's good reason why you don't see that a lot anymore, but Remake is just a fine example of it all coming together in a cohesive and accessible way, unlike a lot of the other earlier Resident Evils. And my GameCube's all packed up in a dusty corner on a shitty TV outside of the living room right now. I could totally go for playing through that again. Like if I could pick it up for a cheap enough price, like I guess $30 is how much I'd be willing to lay down on playing through Remake on a super high-res PC version as opposed to the classic GameCube version. But I could do it. I could do that easily.
Yeah,
I look forward to doing that. Like, I'm about as excited for this as I was when I saw that they were making the new HD version of Resident Evil 4. Actually, I'm more excited because technically that was a really weird release because there was already a PC version of Resident Evil 4. But
oh boy,
yeah, no, that's a rabbit hole. Let's unless there's anything else you guys want to say about Resident Evil, I guess we can move on to the next topic of the docket.
Go for it.
Okay. There was a big Steam update last week. They changed the skin, a few of the color scheme is all different, a few of the icons are different, a few buttons have been displaced. I don't know if you guys have noticed a lot of that, though. I haven't.
No, I did. Really like it, actually.
Oh, okay, because I still don't know if I really know the changes yet. Like, I literally have not had time to play video games at all this week. I just had to read books of video games instead. But I've been on Steam literally one day since this update patched, and I could not really tell the difference. But behind the scenes, apparently, there is a big difference. They added in new support for new app types. You don't see this stuff on the front end, but on the back end, people who have dug around back there found that they have new categorical listings for film, TV series, videos, plugins, which is a thing, plugins, I guess, and music. So the implication, It's totally hypothetical right now, not officially announced, but the implication is that Steam's going to try to compete with, you know, consoles like usual, I guess, really, at the point of things are at right now, for delivering non-game media.
Yeah, well, that's interesting. I mean, like, if you look around, you could find certain things that are non-games on Steam. Like, I know there's like a do your taxes program or something.
Yeah, they
like
have organize your life software on there for.
Yeah, and they have like Indie Game the Movie is available on Steam.
So they've done this stuff before,
right? But it was like one off stuff. Like you don't see like Pirates of the Caribbean on Steam or anything.
Yeah,
but
which would be weird.
I mean, yeah, I could see it working out though. Like, I mean, like just look at it from a marketing perspective with what Steam has been doing over the past year, 2 years. With, like, the trading card things now. I mean, like, Indie Game the Movie has trading cards. So now, like, all your favorite movies, now with trading cards. And then if you watch Pirates of the Caribbean for an hour, you get a Jack Sparrow trading card. And then you watch it five more times, and you have all the trading cards. And then you can trade those with your friends to up your Steam level. And then it's just gonna make Steam revenue go through the roof again, because every transaction of those trading cards, like sold or bought with money, they get a cut of it. And I mean that's just like one thing, one small thing. Like, I don't know, man. It could be a scary road for them to go down, especially with music.
I was just gonna say, I don't know if they're actually really that interested in going down the path of actually like getting a bunch of licensed stuff, because a lot of this stuff they already kind of do. I mean, they already have movies with stuff like Indie Game the Movie, and there's one or two other films on there. You know, music, they have soundtracks from lots and lots of games. They already have lots of this stuff, and I'm curious if they're just sort of coming up with a better way of arranging those things separate from games rather than trying to expand into those. Like, I don't think Steam's interested in competing with iTunes, is, I guess, the way I want to say it. They're interested in selling you game music or game movies, but not necessarily all games or all movies or all musics.
Right. No, I see what you're saying.
I could see them wanting to go down that road if they end up seeing it as a way to sell steam machines.
Mm.
Like that could be a sticker on the box, but it would still be weird. Like either way, I don't necessarily see how this could heavily disrupt the game business so much as just bring in more people, more revenue from more products being on Steam with more trading cards. But I guess people are going to be paranoid about Steam wanting to market itself to the mainstream, and you know, movies and TV shows and music that kind of carries that vibe with it. But like Steam by themselves, they don't make the games on Steam, and those really shouldn't go away if they are also selling movies and TV shows on Steam in the hypothetical future that has not been officially announced yet.
Right.
There's another
just to clarify,
online game store that tried digital media, original digital media, and that was GameTap, and that didn't work out so great. I believe they had Space Ghost episodes where Space Ghost would introduce new games to the platform, and that was
such a weird service. Like, I find it hard to remember what they sold. Like, I saw commercials and marketing for it everywhere, but I never knew what their product was.
It was sort of like GOG before GOG existed, and also subscription-based, so it was like you could have access to a bunch of old emulated Sega Genesis games and a few other old classic titles, and that was kind of it. It was just sort of streaming oldish stuff to you.
It
wasn't streamed like that. It was streamed in the sense that, like,
okay.
you downloaded it through their client, sort of like Steam is. But then all the stupid movies, like the Space Ghost stuff, was streamed. That was, like, YouTubed to you.
Okay. Well, I mean, even then, like, the streaming videos you see on YouTube, aren't they saved to a, cache somewhere? It's still technically downloaded when you watch it, but...
That's just
a technicality.
Well, I guess what I'm saying is what would be interesting to me is whether or not the TV shows means, like, I don't know, crappy like reality TV shows about video game people playing video games. Like, are they going to put Sony's The Tester on? Yeah, The Tester. Oh. Are they going to put The Tester on here? Or is TV series going to be something more like Valve being able to make their own content and put it up? You know, that TF2 Adult Swim series that was never really picked up but was kicking around for a while. Something like that
would be interesting, because that might be a more valuable place for that show to live than, or more what am I looking for?
Valuable?
Valuable.
I like that.
It might be a more feasible place for a Team Fortress 2 show to live than on Adult Swim, because they have a guaranteed audience here of probably a comparable size. In other news, and this is kind of pushing it to the limits here, like that song in GTA 3. A Swedish dad took his kids to the Middle East to teach them about war after getting upset about them playing too many video games.
Yeah, this was a very interesting story. As far as the story goes, the kids really wanted to play the new Call of Duty game. I think it was Ghosts at the time. This is like from a while ago.
Yeah, it was before the current conflict between Israel and Palestine. That's keynote here. They didn't actually take them to a live war zone so much as a war-torn region.
Right. That's the thing, is like this article and like the story is relevant and breaking now and like over the past like week. But
they went on the trip last year.
Yeah. But like this guy's kids wanted to play the new Call of Duty. And so he was like, if you promise to go with me to like see what like a war zone, like a real like war torn area is actually like, and like learn about war for real, then I'll let you play Call of Duty if you want. And they were like, you're not going to do that. And then he's like, yeah, I will. Like, seriously. And they're like, okay. And so they went to, I think it was both Israel and Palestine, right?
The twist is that he was a journalist, so he had access and experience with navigating these areas. But yeah, he visited refugee camps around that sort of area. And I think the incentive was if they went on the trip with him, they'd be able to play as much as they wanted, whereas before he was limiting it. But when they got back home, he says they didn't want to play any of it at all.
Yeah. You know, it's really interesting.
It must have been so much easier like 20 years ago when kids were playing Duke Nukem and they'd make them stop playing that. You just had to take them to the local strip club and teach them about that.
Just to teach them how like pitiful a character like Duke Nukem actually is.
Oh, gosh.
This is who you want to be, Jimmy. And it's a guy that's at a strip club at like 3 in the afternoon, already half drunk.
But yeah, I people were like, of course, this is the internet. People were up in arms about how terrible this dad is. But I'm like, no, I dig it. Good on him.
Yeah. I'm like, it's a rather extreme way to do this. But like, he's a guy who, like, if I'm correct, he was like a journalist in an active war zone at one point.
Yeah.
Like, has real experience with that kind of stuff. And like, he knew what he was doing. And yeah, like, it's a bit extreme, but like, I don't know, it's like an interesting and like seems like a good way to handle the situation. It seems like it actually brought about like knowledge to his kids.
Yeah, ultimately it's not necessarily about how much video games they play so much as imparting values on them and like teaching them the consequences of horrible things like war and stuff. And I don't know, like this reminds me a lot of what I don't know if your guys' parents ever did this, but a lot of the people I grew up with and I, our parents would take us to the Habitat for Humanity houses to, like, build houses in really poor neighborhoods for people who couldn't afford them as a way to, like, expose them and to real-world issues like poverty and kind of encourage kids not to have super materialistic values, you know?
Yeah.
And this is like, it seems like that same situation just taken to a super duper extreme, but still has the same intention at heart. So I'm like, yay.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's cool.
Like I imagine that now that this is happening, these kids all of a sudden are going to develop an interest in politics and in history that they might not have before. Maybe they'll grow up to be good writers or journalists or politicians or something if they hadn't have taken the trip. So whatever, we'll see. That's like butterfly effect stuff. But
But
I dig it.
So what you're saying is Call of Duty is shaping the world leaders of tomorrow.
I mean, no.
Does Chris write for Kotaku?
you could make a headline out of it. What the kids of tomorrow could learn from Call of Duty.
Oh, no. Let's not go down that road.
What blank blank could learn from blank blank.
If you are not in on the joke, Polygon released an article the other week that was unfortunately titled what Watch Dogs can teach us about the Ferguson conflict, and they've since changed the title because that's just ridiculous. But that's all I have to say on that.
Anyway,
what can Bejeweled teach us about blood diamonds?
Oh boy!
I'm trying to think of one.
Trying to input your own variation.
What Donkey Kong could teach us about global warming?
Oh boy!
Oh god! The problem is that's actually halfway believable.
Yeah,
they're not hard to come up with. Just take like some super childish, innocuous, innocent thing and tack a real world issue onto it.
Oh boy.
Let's see. What else is going on in the world? Ukraine. All right, let's see. What's childish and innocuous? And also a video game.
Well, don't bring up Flight Simulator, whatever you do.
Oh.
What Rock Simulator could teach us about... Now, let's see. What's a related geological issue in the world? About strip mining.
There you go. All right.
There you go.
Done.
All right, I'm going to be sending my pitches after we finish out tonight. So, that means I should get started on that. In the meantime, I think we are starting to run our time thin here.
We are.
Aww.
Thanks to all of you lovely listeners for listening, and remember that you can find us all on our YouTube at our respective channels. I'm Bunny Hop Show.
I am Sunder Gamer.
And I'm Camster, I guess, is the channel name, but it's Aaron Signal.
Yeah.
You know what it is.
Yeah.
You know what it is. So,
you know what it is.
And if you, the listener, have anything you want to chime in about, please do it in the forums. We read those things. And rate us 5 stars on iTunes, because we love you and we love that, and that really helps us out.
It really does.
So Yeah, the site, it's still... How is that, Jimmy? How's the site working these days?
We're making some behind-the-scenes headway.
Okay.
It's a long and stressful process, but it's actually going somewhere, and it's actually, like, work is being done. I will... Like, there will be visible updates for the people who are looking for updates on the site when they are available. Like, as soon as there's, like, concrete information that we don't, like... We don't want to be like, oh, it's fixed, and then suddenly, like, it's actually not. And then we have to, like, backpedal. So we're only going to, like, release information on the site when the site is actually, like, ready to go. But it's happening. It's in the process. It works.
Excellent.
It works.
Excellent. So until then, we hope to see you in the forums, which are running as smoothly as they always do. And mm-hmm. we hope to see you next week. So
wait,
have a good...
But not next
What's
week, because we won't
oh,
be
yeah,
here next
week.
Oh,
yeah, that's right, because Dragon Con.
Right.
Yeah, I'll actually be attending a media orientation at the time of the podcast next week. So we're actually going to be skipping a week for the week after. I hope it's okay.
But at least we're letting you know this time.
And then.
And then the week after that... We'll be back, and George will have all kinds of neat Dragon Con things
crazy
to talk about.
Dragon Con stories.
Will there be cosplay?
If those happen. Actually, me and my friends are dressing up as something for the first time ever.
Heck yes.
But I don't want to say what it is until it is revealed to the world.
Take pictures. If you can meet Vulpin Props, I think he's going to be at Dragon Con. He like always goes. If you can find him and meet him, tell him hi for me.
I will tell him hi for you.
Thank you.
All right. Have a good week, everybody.
All right. See ya.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.